Greetings and welcome to the GCSAA podcast presented in partnership with our good friends from Enview. I'm Scott Hollister, the editor-in-chief of GCSAA's Golf Course Management Magazine, and I appreciate you tuning in to this episode. Regular listeners to the podcast will know that at times we like to swing our doors open to guest hosts from around golf course management, kind of give them a platform to talk with who they want about anything they want. And that is the case with this episode, number 55 overall, as we welcome Kayla Kipp, the equipment manager at the Nemacolin Resort in Pennsylvania, back to the GCSA podcast. Kayla is the first woman to earn certification through GCSAA's Certified Turfgrass Equipment Manager, or CTEM, program, and has been at the forefront of the Women in Turf movement. And on this episode, she is joined by another individual who has been active with the Women in Turf, and that is Bree Kenny. Bree is the manager of environmental science for Troon Golf. Kayla and Bree are great friends, and they talk about their shared love of nature, the state of sustainability on golf courses, and their experiences with the Women in Turf group, most recently at the U.S. Women's Open in July at Pebble Beach. It was fun for me to sit back and listen in on the conversation between these two, and I hope you'll enjoy it as well. Before we get going, a quick reminder that video versions of the podcast are now available on GCSAA's YouTube channel and on GCSAA TV. As always, the audio version of the podcast is still available on most major podcast platforms, but if video is your thing, I'd encourage you to check out the video version of the GCSAA podcast on YouTube or GCSAA TV. And with that, let's go. It is episode 55 of the GCSAA podcast featuring our guest host, Kayla Kipp and Bree Kenny with Troon Golf. Hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. I'm pretty excited because every time that I get to talk to Bree Kenny about nature and animals, I also love nature. So I hope this is as fun for you as it is for me. Now, I'm Kayla Kipp. I'm an equipment manager at Nemacolin in Farmington, Pennsylvania. So I turn the wrenches and clean up messes, and that's pretty much what I do. So whenever I get to hear about, especially other ladies, doing cool jobs that aren't per se the normal, I'm really excited. So I would like to have Brianne introduce herself. She is a biologist with Troon Resorts, and she can tell you some more.
Thank you, Kayla. It's really exciting to be here. Anytime I get to talk to you too, it's a win in my book, and especially talking about nature. So yeah, I'm the manager of environmental science for Troon. I've had this position for about 3 years. I started in October 2019, so got to start right before COVID and then picking things up after that. So
how did that job change? Not that any of us want to remember COVID at all. How did that role change for you on either side of COVID?
The position was created and then they hired me. So I had all these ideas of how my first year was going to go. And then about 4 months in, everything changed. So it was sort of good timing because I was stuck inside and remote, I was able to do a lot more learning than I had previously done. So I worked as a greenskeeper for a year, trying to learn as much about, you know, the life of golf course maintenance as I could. But obviously you're kind of limited within that year. But then when COVID happened, I was able to, you know, just kind of take it back to textbooks and start reading and trying to, you know, get a lot of the at least theoretical and more academic things in my brain so that when I could start going out and visiting the properties, I would maybe have some of that vocabulary and things down. So it worked out pretty well. And now I spend most of my time on the road doing site visits, wildlife habitat projects. So I'm kind of grateful for that time because it gave me a good base. And now I feel a lot more comfortable, you know, traveling around and even learning agronomic topics. I always say it's such a good classroom when I'm with the agronomists on a property and they're teaching me about pests or disease. I'm like, oh, okay, I remember reading about this and now here it is in front of me.
Putting it together is always fun. Now I've seen you travel on Twitter a lot and you know, you said you get out. So how far are they sending you? How far are you traveling?
Well, technically, we have about 700 properties around the world, so it could be it, and it will be international at some point. But obviously, COVID really didn't help with that. But so far, I've just stayed within the United States. But now that everything's picking back up, there's been talks of going to Europe. We've got an agronomist based in Switzerland. We have one based in the Middle East and one in Australia. So maybe linking up with them. And then our Florida agronomist goes to some properties in Costa Rica quite often. And he said they might be interested in kind of my services. So hopefully international soon. But in the meantime, I've seen so much of the United States I've never seen before. So that's also been really fun.
That's so freaking cool, I'm telling you. And like I said, like I love nature, and a lot of my friends will send me pictures. Like, what is this? What's this plant? What is this animal? What's this insect? Do you get that a lot?
Yes, I do. And I love it. If that's like one of those things I wish I could make a job, is just people sending me pictures and helping them identify and understand what's around them. If I was a trust fund baby, that's probably what I'd be spending my days doing. And actually, just last night, a superintendent that I've known in Phoenix just through the Cactus and Pine GCSA chapter, he now took a job in Tucson and just sent me a bunch of photos last night of he saw a mama bobcat catch, I think it was a rabbit, but it's hard to always tell in text pictures sometimes. But then it was giving it to its baby, and like so the baby watched, or I guess the kitten, it watched mom hunt, and then she was feeding it, and he just sent me that, and I was like, that's so cool. And those things make me really happy, and I just love seeing, especially golf course, people just get excited. Like even you sent me that picture of you and the bird watcher, and like that just brought me so much joy. And it was just a random picture of you and them, and I'm like, this is so cool that they linked up and then that they were on property together. So I
Yeah,
love it.
they just stopped by to see what all different kinds of birds they could find on our golf course. And I'm a little bummed that you won't be coming to mine. I mean, you're more than welcome at any time, but I'm sure we could at least talk the entire time we drive around and look for stuff. And there's a zoo here, so I'm sure you would see some exotic stuff too.
Oh, yeah. If I'm in the area, I'll let you know for sure.
Okay, yeah, good. Did you ever think, whenever you were in school, and where did you go to school, by the way?
So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and basically never left much the state and barely left Cleveland. We basically lived between Cleveland and Toledo, where my family was. So basically, the shore of Lake Erie was all I knew. So for undergrad, I went to Ohio State, which is silly, but for me it was a big step of like I want to start seeing the world, and Columbus was 2.5 hours away, and it was Ohio State's a big school, so I was like, maybe I'll start getting some worldly experiences there. So that's where I
Was
went.
your major in what you're doing now? Is that how you started? Were you like, this is what I want to do?
No, so I didn't even know this was an option, and I hadn't really seen much nature beyond the Cleveland Zoo and the TV shows, you know, Steve Irwin, the Kratt Brothers, Jeff Corwin, things like that. I always knew I was drawn to it, but I didn't know it was a career. And I remember being with my high school counselor, kind of telling them my interests, and they just were like, "Oh, so you like science? You should be an engineer." So that's what I started off in. And just not realizing how limited, like, even the people in my town were limited in the possibilities. So I started off in that. But I did an internship at actually the NASA Center in Cleveland, which was pretty cool. But I was like, I actually don't want to do this forever. So one of the benefits of Ohio State being so big, I did have that opportunity to explore. And then I discovered the Department of Environment and Natural Resources, and they had zoology, and then they had forestry, fisheries, and wildlife science, which ended up being my major. So, funnily enough, I had classes right across the street from the turf school and didn't even know it existed. But I was right there.
So you had no idea that your major would lead you to a golf course.
No.
And I have a little inside tip on the next question. So whenever you thought of a golf course prior to what you're doing now for Troon, How has your perception changed?
Oh, it's changed a lot because I had never been on a golf course until after I graduated undergrad and moved out to Phoenix. So for me, like golf was almost on the same pedestal as I guess polo or something. It was like to me, it just seemed like a relic of a sport for rich people, and it wasn't something normal people did because there weren't really golf courses around me. In the second city that I lived in, we had one, but it was like in the rich neighborhood where the some of our Cleveland sports people like Brady Quinn and whatever, the quarterbacks, the basketball players, that's where they all lived, and that was their golf course attached to it. So I was like, that was kind of my view of it, was it was attached to the really rich communities. And then additionally, it just, I don't know where this perception comes from, but even though I had never been on one, I just assumed like the over manicured landscape was the ideal. And so they'll throw down as much chemicals and they'll throw down as much water because that's what it takes to get it there. And they don't care about anything else. And I don't really know where that comes from, but that was just my idea for the longest time.
I know a lot of people think that way that have never been involved with the agronomy part of golf. They think we just over-fertilize and chemical it to death, actual to a life. But you taught a class at Pebble Beach this year, which you're gonna have to tell us about that experience too. Tell us about Pebble Beach first and how cool that was.
Oh God, yeah. We could go into this for a whole hour. I mean, even being outside of golf, that was one of the few golf courses I've actually heard of before. And my boyfriend was playing the PGA game leading up to it, so I'd see the holes. And gosh, but then just being there was just amazing. And I was lucky enough to work on the front nine, and just that, like, was it 6 through 8, was just my favorite part. And looking out, it was really hard to focus on on our work actually, because I kept wanting to look at the otters and the seals down there and the birds. But yeah, I think those memories will stick for a while, just being out there and watching, being with a group of women and watching all these women work in this beautiful setting. It's like, and that night of the sunset where everyone was just enjoying it together, like, I mean, if I forget that, I'm probably have high grade dementia by that point, because that's just like seared in my brain right now, and I think about it still at least every week.
There's no forgetting an experience like that. And it was really cool for me as well. And all week I was just bluffing rough and, kind of small tasks. And then on Saturday morning in the dark, they're like, "Hey, we need somebody to mow fairways on the front nine." And I'm like, "Okay, how hard could it be?" And I was on back nine all week. So as the sun's coming up, I'm mowing a fairway right along a cliff to the ocean. And
Oh.
it took my breath away. Okay, that was really cool to be there. That was a once in a lifetime experience, I feel like, and I'm blessed that I got to be a part of it for sure. And I know while we were there that they were sharing efforts that they've done at Pebble Beach to protect that beautiful ocean frontage and the animal, the marine life and the wildlife that live on property. It's a very large property. It's very seen by the world. And you also taught a class while you were there to the ladies that were volunteering. Can you tell us about that?
If I remember correctly, that the title was something about moving towards sustainability within the industry, because Kimberly put together kind of an environmental education day, which was I was really excited about, because I haven't really been in like a full day dedicated to that in the golf industry yet. And then with the women on top of it, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much potential here. And I feel like the women are have just that just like almost this ability where they're more willing to jump into these things and these projects, and they might not know what to do exactly, but they're not afraid to start. And I think maybe that comes from being used to being uncomfortable and being used to being in situations where you do just have to jump in. But so for me, that was really exciting, and I was really happy that I got to be a part of it as well. And so I just wanted, I guess most of my talk was based on sharing some of the things that I've seen being an outsider coming into the industry and some of the major areas where I think we can improve on to move closer to sustainability, and then sharing some funny and sometimes not so funny things that I've seen at shops that have also been very terrifying, and just, you know, putting that out there as saying, please don't ever let me see this at your shop.
Right. We're not always the best stewards, but we do try our best.
Yeah. For the most part.
Right. So being an equipment manager and a certified turf equipment manager and being in the military before, I know that environmental issues are major. We're protecting our waterways. Water is a huge issue across the U.S., not always in my area, but for somebody it is at any point. So what's the best piece of advice you would give anybody in a maintenance area, just for my fancy here, moving forward towards sustainability? And I do know some guys that have been working on that kind of thing. What's the best piece of advice you could give us?
If I had to boil it down, this is something that I have been telling myself lately on my site visits is, if this was my first golf course that I walked on is what changed my opinion about the industry, because, you know, there was a lot more desert habitat than turf, and the superintendent had a background in forestry, and he was very, very smart and very interested in the same things. And I was like, oh, so these spaces are different, and the people are different than I was expecting. So now when I'm doing these visits, I kind of just try to remind myself of that lens. Like, if this was my first golf course, would my negative opinion be reinforced, or would it be challenged here? And so when I'm walking through the maintenance facility and things like that, like if you're seeing a wash pad that's leading directly to the pond behind you and there's no filtration, that's going to reinforce the negative opinion. And so I try to look at it through that lens, and wash pads are kind of one of my biggest, my biggest areas that I've been working on, because I realize a lot of facilities, especially municipal, are dealing with structures back from, it could go back all the way to, you know, the 60s or before that, but especially the 60s to 90s, they weren't really designed with the environmental considerations in mind. So when you're trying to, you know, fix those old structures, it's difficult. But if there was one single place to look, I would say probably your wash pads, and usually the mixed load pads are somewhere near that. So that whole area, and you could even throw in chemical storage, maybe that whole area together would be one single thing to focus on.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And obviously in the shop, we're on concrete and we're cleaning up messes all the time because it's where you're supposed to make it. But yeah, we've been revamping our gear because it's important. It's important to us, and it's important to the industry and the perception that the public sees. 100%.
Yeah, and, I mean, even just think about bringing your friends or your members by your shop. Like, what would they think after they saw it? And I know that's difficult, because if they're not in the field too, they might be more judgmental, not realize some of the things. But there's been some cases that I've seen where I'm like, this is really bad, and this is years of buildup. Like, we need to address this.
And it happens. Sometimes things just fall out of our purview, but we need a reminder. And Trin puts you to be as a reminder, I suppose.
Yeah.
So whenever you're going around to the properties there, what are you doing? Are you suggesting butterflies in the rough? What are the things you're suggesting whenever you're walking around for properties for them?
So the bulk of what I have is an environmental and regulatory audit. So especially as we get if a new property comes on board, I usually try to do a transition type of visit, just kind of, you know, part of the welcome to Troon, like, here's all these resources. So that is where I can evaluate. I'll walk through the shop and just try to identify, like, the wash pad, their hazardous waste management, OSHA. I'm very, you know, I get really bullish, especially being at least a greenskeeper for a little while, when I see employee safety issues or like basic things like not giving them a bathroom at the maintenance facility or drinking water, I will get really defensive of them when I'm talking to the GMs and the owners, and I'll be like, "Hey,
We
you
haven't
need."
even got into women's rooms, right? We're just
Yeah,
simple.
exactly. And I even had to spell that out for a GM recently. They didn't have a bathroom, and then they were like, "Well, how many stalls do we need?" And I was like, "Well, you should have two separate areas in case you have a female." And they didn't seem like they even thought that was a possibility. And I was like, "Trust me. You need to do that, and you should be, they should be able to have a private space. Like, come on, I'm not asking for a lot here." So yeah, so that's kind of like the bulk of the audit. And then it also depends. So the cool thing about golf courses is they're all unique, and they some will have like some of our courses have breeding species of birds where they're already engaging with state agencies, federal agencies. Some have endangered species. Some just have areas that they want some advice on, like that are preserves, or just areas that they've wanted to, what's the right word? Rehabilitate, revegetate. So it really depends, and that's where it gets a lot of fun, is like what's already existing, what have they been wanting to do, and how can I help them? Either I can give them specs for a project, or I can connect them with the right people. I still have friends that work for Game and Fish and Audubon Society. So sometimes just like, having that connector there is a lot easier than cold calling them. So that I guess that's the basis of my visits.
That's
People
super
are
cool.
afraid of me at first, but I try to help them understand I'm there to help you. And even in some cases to protect you. So I think once if I can help, if I'm doing my job, they'll see that I'm there to help rather than see me as the enemy.
Right. And I know I've suggested to our bosses, and it's only after meeting you and hearing about a lot of these things, I'm like, we could do more. We really could. We could, for our environment. We have a lot of high fescue areas that we only maintain once a year. We could do, bird habitat or butterflies or anything, honeybees. So we're looking into programs, and I know the first person that I'm going to call whenever we do that. And I'm blessed to know you, and I'm glad to introduce you to the world here.
Oh,
Yeah,
thanks.
I do love you. The favorite my oh, I have two favorite stories that you've told me in the past. One is about your favorite, I think it would fowl to observe, because you're crazy about these itty bitty little owls. Tell everybody about those, because I love whenever you get so passionate about them. They're so cool.
Yeah, I've done a few talks on them just because I love them. Burrowing owls. So everyone, if you're listening to this, you should pause this and just Google them real quick, get some videos, because they're just like they're one of those animals where you're like, how did that happen? They're just so goofy, and they make the weirdest noises. They look at you in ridiculous ways. Like, yeah, they'll like try to just turn their head like a I don't know, a 180, but not horizontally, vertically. They'll try to like look at you upside down, or then they look like they want to murder you, but they're just this cute little fluff ball, and you're just like, oh, you can't murder me. So they're just entertaining. And we've been fortunate to do some work with them since I used to work for a bird of prey rescue center here in Phoenix. I just know that they've had to rescue a lot, because with development, these burrowing owls are unique in that they live underground. But they can't, again, it's like, how did this happen? They can't actually, they still have talons, so they can't dig in the ground. So they rely on other animals like badgers and gopher tortoises and things like that. But then when development happens, their burrows are collapsed. And so what usually happens is an agency will come in and rescue them and put them in a temporary place so they can find somewhere to relocate them. So we've done a lot of work. There's the Western subspecies. So that's a lot of the states west of the Mississippi. Florida has its own subspecies as well, though. So a lot of our Western golf courses in Florida have have them, and we've done work with the agencies to kind of relocate them. Sometimes we just had one in Florida that the course was, getting ready for renovation, and since the one course was just like there was no activity, a burrowing owl decided to come in and move into one of the bunkers because an iguana had dug out some of the sand, and so we had to halt the construction on that side of the course until breeding season was over, just to make sure that the baby there were no babies in there. And the members really got on board with it and ended up naming the owl Bunker. But I heard that it just took off and it didn't have babies. It was just like, oh, this is a nice quiet place to live for a little bit. So.
Get back to this episode in a moment, but now a word from InView, which is committed to working with golf course superintendents to accomplish great things on the course every day. The company has the expertise and innovative solutions to help you navigate turf challenges year-round while achieving the most consistent playing conditions possible. One of the best things that you can do to protect your turf against snow mold is to use solutions with multiple active ingredients. Combinations of fungicides such as Interface Stress Guard and or Mirage Stress Guard provide effective and consistent control of snow molds and improves turf quality in the spring. Including Densicore fungicide in a primer application or in the final tank mix of the year will add another mode of action and further improve consistency of control in particularly challenging environments. For superintendents looking to control POA in warm season turf, recent studies have shown that mid to late fall is the most effective time to tackle that, since POA starts germinating with rain and soil temperatures near 70 degrees. That means that pre-emergent herbicides like Spectacle Flow should be applied soon with traditional timing. Other recent research shows waiting until later in the year and applying a pre- and post-emergent provides optimum POA control, plus increased flexibility around weather, labor, and play. Additionally, using this new strategy provides better protection against resistance, which is a growing concern with POA. Right now, you can save on all the products you and your turf depend on with the newly improved My InView Rewards program. Through September 30th, InView is featuring their Now Solutions program for members, which offers great deals on a wide variety of turf products that will keep your golf course thriving all season long. Go to rewards.inview.us to log in or join to start saving today. To learn more about the agronomic solutions that can help you prevent snow mold and POA to give your golfers great playing conditions all year long, contact your InView representative or go to us.inview.com/golf. Always read and follow label instructions and remember that not all products are registered for use in all states. Once again, our thanks to everyone at InView for their support of the GCSA podcast. And now back to this episode.
And we had volunteered at the Women's Open, the first Women in Turf event, basically. And you mentioned Kimberly Gard. She helped set that up with Troy Flanagan. And that was a career-changing moment for myself. And that's whenever I realized I'm not alone here. And I met you. Very cool experience for me. What was that like? The inaugural Women's Open led by a mostly female turf team.
I know we all say we're not criers, but I'll probably tear up at some point. So I'm going to try to keep it down. It was a life-changing moment for me as well, because I think most of us have all worked at a golf course where we are the only female. I was fortunate enough to have a horticulturist there, and her daughter would work there in the summer. So I at least had a couple females with me, but a lot of the days I was just, on my own with the guys doing section work and stuff. but so to be just like, I don't know, it's a completely different feeling when you're out on the course with the other females. I don't want men to think that we don't like them or that we're against them or anything like that. But if they could put themselves in our shoes of, like, imagine being the only male on the course for so long, and then all of a sudden you're with a ton of guys, and it's just a different dynamic. So I think just having that different dynamic of women who have that are like me. There's also, I mean, we all have different personalities, but I feel like I definitely click more with the women in turf than I do, say, office women, for example. I just have a lot more in common and a lot more shared experience, I guess, there. So yeah, I just remember, and I did this at Pebble too, just, and maybe this is just me and my personality, but just sitting back and watching everyone interact together and the camaraderie and the respect and the giggling and things like that. Like, it's just those
We
moments.
don't giggle. We don't giggle. Don't say
Madison makes me giggle. I have
that.
no shame. She brings out the like child in me so quickly. So yeah, just I, it, there's just there was just a completely different feeling there.
Did you expect the weather to be that cold? Because I didn't. In San Francisco, I was freezing. I had no idea. They were like, oh yeah, 55. I'm like, oh, that's great. No, not at all. Yeah, it was so cold. I think that also brought us back together a lot more because we were always ready to huddle around some heat. I thought so. So
Yeah,
that
and I
was
think
really cool.
that's part of the bonding, right? Is like there, you can't really, it's almost like that shared suffering. I've heard that being in like the military too, where you get through PT or something together. But yeah, just being out there fighting the elements, fighting your exhaustion together is like such a better bonding experience than you can ever get in a conference setting or a classroom setting.
Right, the schedule was intense. And on Thursday, I had a moment and I got pretty emotional on Thursday after 4 days of super early mornings and then classes. And I was getting burnt out and I broke down a little bit. And I was like, how cool is this? And you kind of catch a second wind. And in Pebble Beach, whenever the sun came out late in the week, it was like, oh, here it is. This is our moment. This is our little second wind. Hallelujah moment. So that was really cool. And it definitely made me emotional too, and I'll never ever forget it. And what also made me emotional was you caring for this young bird that had fallen out of a tree, I think.
Yeah, so I didn't see it. I think it was Jill Seymour and Alex Hills. Gosh, I think it was one of their giant cypress trees, and the ravens seemed to have had a nest up there. It was too high for me to see, but they were messaging me on the WhatsApp saying I had to get over to this hole, and I was like, "What's going on?" And yeah, there was a baby raven on the ground, and you could hear the parents up in the tree overhead, and so I don't know for sure, but it was right around the fledgling season, so it could have tried to take its first flight, or it's possible like a sibling tried to push it out or something. I don't know what happened, but it ended up on the floor and it wasn't doing too well. So oh gosh, this raven still, it still sits in my mind because I don't know. So I tried to relocate it nearby so the parents could know where it was, but I was stupid enough to relocate it to the other side of the tee where the women were going to be hitting off on. And luckily I realized it was squawking like right next to the tee box. And I was like, oh shoot. But I noticed like right before play started getting up there. So I ran back over there to relocate it to a different tree. And I remember one of the USGA guys looking at me because I was walking across the tee with a towel. And he was like, "What are you doing?" Basically. And so I flipped it up so he could see I had a bird. So I wasn't just some random girl walking around. But so
Just
then
drying off the tee.
yeah, I was like, I'm not trying to get like, I'm not a suspect here. So yeah, eventually, so I got it to another spot that was closer to the maintenance shop, with because one of the holes for the other course was there, so then the parents could still hear it. They knew where it was, but it was, despite all the squawking going on, I felt like it'd be the least disruptive because there were two tees. There was like the one tee going one way and then another one going the other right at that corner. So I was like, oh, this is a terrible spot because I don't want to mess up anyone's shot. And the unfortunate thing during that time too, the rescues are kind of loaded on the number of babies coming in, and because I've been there before and had to do that, so I called them, and I think they were too far away to be able to pick it up, so we just had to relocate it and hope for the best, which is usually what happens. And if the parents know where it is, they'll still care for it. But and that's how I ended up getting the the nickname Raven, since we like to give each other nicknames. And I like that a lot because I also wear black all the time. But I still always think about that bird, and I'm like, I wonder what happened to it. I hope it made it.
Right, it stinks to not know.
Yeah, exactly.
But anytime any of us don't know something, or we need wildlife help, we know who we come to, and that's you. So
yeah, absolutely. Feel free. I even have superintendents do that here in Phoenix. They'll be like, "Hey, we have an injured hawk. Do you want to come get it, or what should we do?" And I'm like, "I'm on it."
It's so cool to have you in our camp. 100%. I love it so much. Did you ever imagine from that event that the Women in Turfgrass movement would have grown to where it's at now? After 3 years, and it's still growing.
Yes, I definitely knew it was going to grow, but maybe not realizing how quickly it would grow. And actually, this is my one regret for the talk at Pebble, is at the end, I did have a bunch of slides about women in the industry and women leadership and some things like that. But we were behind on time, and I got like a little too focused on that maybe, and I should have just done it. So I'm hoping at some point in the future, I could maybe contribute to that, because some of the talks later on in the week, I was like, wow, this is a subject that we need to sit down and have long conversations about. But one of the things in there is, from my previous background in biology, they're kind of ahead of the turf industry on the women, I guess, I don't know, their women movement. I don't know what you want to call it, but the
Do
women
they
are
have involved. A movement, or is it just more plentiful?
So they did have something like that. It wasn't quite, because it's so large and you kind of break off into like your specialties like ornithology, herpetology. I think they had smaller movements, but within the bigger one. But that had been a talk for a while, because people didn't even want to hire women for the field jobs because they didn't think they could handle the outdoors work. Or I even heard one time of a professor said he wasn't going to hire women for his field work because he didn't think they could just sit around the campfire after work and drink beers with them. And I was like, first of all, that's a stupid metric. And second of all, have you met some of the women? Because I can't even keep up with the women in turf, especially with the beers that are drank. And the men can't even keep up with some of them. So yeah, there was like a lot of discrimination or just like a thought that women couldn't handle the work. And one of the things I had in my slides was, I still subscribe to some of our member, like the Wildlife Society membership, for example, and I was reading the magazine and they had a story on women in the conservation field. And they were talking about how women made up 2% of the membership back in 1944. And for me, I ended up highlighting this entire section because I was like, that's so interesting, because we're at 2% of women in the turf industry. I don't know if we might, I don't know if it moved at all since the last time I checked, but I was drawing that correlation between women being 2% back like almost 80 years ago versus now. And I think now the women are about 36% of the Wildlife Society membership. That doesn't mean that's all the women, of course, but it's a good proxy. So for me, that was hope that the women in turf movement will grow. And I think it will be similar to biology, where people will start recognizing like we're fully capable of doing the work, and there's value to having these different perspectives, backgrounds, experiences. So I've definitely felt like that it will grow, but gosh, even just to see the young, I wasn't expecting to see some of the younger women at Pebble. Like, we had 19-year-olds. That's our Shania's already on the equipment manager track, so young. And then, you know, Molly and Addison.
Molly's with USGA now.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, I didn't even know we had all these young women. And so just to see that was really empowering, because it's also weird because now I've recognized that I'm in that middle generation where it's like I'm not that youngster anymore, so that's the realization I have to go with. But it's also nice to see like, hey, we have another generation coming up, and it's just going to keep growing from there.
Whenever you were out in at Pebble Beach and we were at Monterey Bay. Was there anything that you had picked out like before we even got there that you had to see or you had to go look for something? Was there anything in particular that was like, I have to go look for a seal? I have to see a seal.
No, I try not to like set those hard ones just because I know you don't really have much time during the tournaments. But yes, I definitely wanted to see a seal, an otter. And then there were some seabirds that I was hoping to see. I did see some new ones, which we called lifers. So that's always fun for me when I get to see a new bird for the first time. And I'm not around the ocean very much, so I don't get to see the water birds and the seabirds. So I don't even like one's called pigeon guillemot. I don't even know how to pronounce it, but it's really cool to me. And just to check that off my list was fun. It's like I tell people it's like Pokemon Go. It's just kind of like trying to catch them all.
The natural world version of Pokemon
Yeah,
Go.
but to be
It's
honest, I
my
think
favorite.
more the ones that I really wanted to see were people like you, Pam. Like I haven't been able to see you or Pam since well, I don't know, maybe we said hi at the show, but like just to be able to spend time with some of the women I haven't seen since the Olympic Club, that was more on my bucket list. Like I need some time with them. And there's never enough. And I'm always like, gosh, I wish we lived closer. And even Madison's in Phoenix and we don't get to see each other that much. So just that, I guess that would definitely be more on my bucket list. It was just like I just want to like breathe air next to them for a while.
Right, yeah. We definitely formed a lot of really great bonds, and every time we do these volunteer events, which if other people haven't volunteered for an event, do it. It's like the greatest thing that I've ever done. I've done three women's opens now, and I also did the Mizuho Open up in New Jersey this year with New York City in the background. It was freaking gorgeous. It was phenomenal. It was me and Linda Carrier. Only two women on the crew, but you know what? It was still fun. Great learning experience. The sunrises were just absolutely incredible. But whenever you do these events and you walk in on Monday, it's here we go. It's going to be a long, long week. And then you get to Friday, Saturday, and you're like, where did it go?
Yeah, that happened to me
So.
at Pebble. I was so mad when Friday came. I was like, it can't be. Like, I didn't, this was not enough time. I was actually like legitimately mad. I ended up changing my flight so I could stay for the ceremony and stay an extra day because I was like, I'm not going back to the office. I'm staying as long as I can.
And speaking of staying for the end, because I almost missed that part. And they were like, oh, come on, we're gonna walk down the 18th fairway. And I'm like, why? What is this?
Yeah, didn't you have a flight to catch?
Yes, I did. But how cool, how are you supposed to miss that? I had no idea that that was a thing. Did you?
I had seen like that happened. Well, I don't know if everyone walks down the fairway like that, but I had definitely seen that they do the closing ceremonies, and I've never stuck around long enough to be part of them. But at this time, I had the ability to stay, and so, I did, but and gosh, you know, just linking arms, walking down the fairway together was that's another moment where I was just like, this is awesome.
Absolutely incredible, 100%. And yeah, I don't know what to say. It's always been incredible. It's always been fun. And my network has grown immensely. I don't know how to keep up with everybody. I try to on Twitter, and it's almost impossible to just keep up with everybody at this point, and it's amazing. And being on the women's leadership, the women's task group with GCSA, who have really gotten behind this as well, forming the Women's Leadership Academy. Did you apply? Are you going?
I did not apply. So that's on me. I thought, for some reason, I thought she said like most of us who had been to the open wouldn't get into the academy this year. And also to touch on the tournaments, I agree with you. They're so impactful that now it's, and I'm lucky that even my bosses in agronomy think they're so important. We we put it on our list that we have to be at a few every year. So there's actually Phoenix Country Club does the Ch Charles Schwab Cup that same week. So I was just like, oh, I don't know if I want to bail on them this year. So I'm gonna work that tournament with them instead. But and then I just saw the list came out and I was like, dang it, these are all the people I want to hang out with.
Listen, it came out 2 days ago, and I saw the email, but I have been super stacked in the shop after verification, just trying to unbury this place. And I just looked through the list, and I couldn't believe how many names I recognize and how many of these people that I value as my very close friends. I'm super excited. I'm going.
Yeah, I saw.
Super, super, super excited. I cannot wait for this. And the idea is to learn and grow together, make better leaders out of us, and bring more women in. And it's going to be amazing.
I
I'm
agree.
super
So
excited.
you'll have to t the one silver lining is I saw Pam didn't apply either, so maybe next year that'll give me more Pam time. And then, yeah, I'm sure there's still a ton of women, so I think next year will be good, but you can rub it in our faces for what we're missing this year.
I'll call you back. How about that? I'll call you back. So what's next on the agenda for you? Where are you traveling to next? What's happening? Is it tournament? Is it work? Is it what is it?
Yeah, it's actually a tournament. And I know people out there are going to think I'm like, what do they call them? Professional volunteers now. And please don't think of that as me, but I usually, so within the Troon portfolio, we have three major PGA events. So we have Century Tournament of Champions at Kapalua, and that's a big one for us. We've been taking students, and I'm bringing a small group of women. So it's like a mini women in turf learning experience, too. So that's one. And then Silverado's next week. So at Silverado Resort in Napa has the Fortinet tournament. I actually know that superintendent and his wife really well from Kapalua, and he was asking for women. He's like, can you get me some women? It's not a great time of the year for a lot of clubs, unfortunately, but from Morgan Taylor's recommendation, I'm bringing Jessica Anders, who is at a university, and this will be her first tournament. So I'm hoping that I make it such a great experience that she signs up immediately for a U.S. Women's and open with the women in turf group. So we're just have like a mini it's kind of like your other tournament where it's just gonna be really two women in turf, but the superintendent's wife is a teaching pro, so it's technically I consider she's done so much turf work too that I'm like you're a woman in turf as well. And then we have the one in Phoenix. So I do three every year and then the women in, the US Women's Open when I can. So next week is Silverado and I'm really excited to just, meet Jessica and just try and the crew there. I really love even some of our friends from Hawaii come over. Oh, and speaking of one of the other things is pretty soon, and I hope you don't mind me plugging this. I'll be delivering the donation funds to our Kapalua crew, and just down the street we have Kaanapali as well. So Troon manages two of the golf courses on the west side of Maui, and unfortunately our Kapalua and Kaanapali crews were really impacted by the fires. I think over at least half of our agronomy staff from both locations lost homes. Quite a few of them lost family as well. So I'm just gonna put this out there. I'm keeping it open during, I don't know when this is gonna air, but I'll keep it open past that. So there's a GoFundMe and there's a Venmo as well if you want to contribute because, gosh, the impact has been bad. But like just speaking of people sharing photos, their resilience is crazy because one of the guys yesterday is sending me a video of aerification. He likes to send me rainbow pictures and he's like, no rainbow today, but we're back at it. And he lost his mom in the fires and he's back at work. He's got a better attitude than I've ever had in my life, I feel like. He's just always just a bright soul and just will send me rainbows just to make me happier. And so like these people, I really care about them, and to know that they've been hurting has hurt me. So that was the motivation for the fund, and I would really love to be able to at least give $5,000 to each property, and we're at 99,500. So just need 500 more. So
what happened there is absolutely tragic, and I'm sure they'll accept any help that they can get and some kind of backup, because you lose everything. So every little bit helps for sure.
Yeah, like, and I think the hardest part is none of them knew it was coming, right? So some of them were at work, some of them, one of the guys had to run out even without shoes on because he couldn't, it happened so fast. I think he was like taking a nap or something. So he just had to run, and then he lost everything in the second. So I wanted to do something because, you like the tournament thing, you do get really close with people when you're out there at 4 in the morning, exhausted together, and you spend so much time of the day together that you want to do something. So this was the only thing I could think of to do.
I don't know if you feel the same, but I always expected this to kind of just be a job whenever I started working in turf. Like, I'm just a mechanic, and it's just going to be my 9-to-5, and it's just going to be a job. And my goodness, was I wrong? Did you ever expect it to be and feel so much like a family? I mean, we're all spread out, but just that camaraderie and that closeness. Like, I feel like I just have a bunch of family all over the country and beyond.
I feel the same way, and I definitely didn't expect that because my first job on the course was waitressing, and I just hated being stuck inside. So I just kept walking outside, talking to the superintendent, and took that as a job. And my mindset was, because the reason I took that job in the first place was a scholarship to finish my master's in biology. And so my thought was just, this is a temporary job and then I'm gone. And never did I think we would get here. And that's one of the things I wrote to Troy. It took me a few months to be able to get the words out, but I wrote to him and I said, one of the gifts from that first Women's Open with them in 2021 was community. Like, that was one of the first times where I felt like I was part of a community. I felt like I actually belonged somewhere. And that was one of the things I actually didn't get from the women in biology. And, I'm not saying that, like, they're bad or anything like that. It just, I didn't have that opportunity with them like I did here. And now, like, even my friends in the industry are from that golf, the first golf course I worked, like, we'll still hang out with them. And it's just like, yeah, that feeling of being part of a community is, gosh, it's really, it does mean a lot. And I never thought I would find that with the turf community that I used to say I hated and that were terrible people. I can't believe I used to say that. And that's why now I get really defensive of you guys as well, because I'll think of people like you and be like, you cannot say that about them. They care more than you do about a lot of things. So, yeah, it's been, I don't know the right word for it.
It's funny because a lot of my friends are like, you work too much, or you work too hard, and you do too many of these things. You're always traveling. And I said, it brings me a lot of joy. It helps a lot of people out. And between the equipment managers groups and GCSAA and Real Turf Techs and WhatsApp groups all over the place, I've lost track of how many groups there are that I'm in. And I just feel blessed every day of my network and my people. Everybody's my people, and you're one of my favorites. And I'm so glad that we sat down to do this today, Raven. if you're up for it, if anybody wants to get a hold of you about donating or just send you a bird photo and ask what it is, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I think you can search Bree Kenny and it should pop up, but if not, it's Biolo Bree. So it's BIOLOBRIE. So that's the handle. I should be pretty easy to find. I try to be pretty active on there, and yeah, feel free to message me anytime. And if you pull up those handles, you'll see the donation things. But if you want to message me, that works as well. And also, I do want to say, Kayla, that it's really nice. You're an inspiration for many, and you're very humble. But gosh, you're making history, being the first woman certified turf equipment manager. What do you call it, CTEM, or do you just say
CTEM.
TTM? Okay, yeah. So I really, it's just really awesome to see all the work that you're doing, and you're one of the best people in turf, and why it does feel like a community. Because you, one of the best things I like about you is your ability to get along with everyone, and I'm not that person that it has that. I'm just like, you're just so good at it, and just so good at talking to anyone about anything. And I think because of you, that's why the turf community is as strong as it is, because there's people like you that are able to connect with everyone and bring everybody in.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Make me tear up over here. But yeah, I'll definitely be in touch with you after this, and I'll let you know how the Leadership Academy went. Thank you for being here. And I hope everybody listens and hits you up with anything they want to know, and we just keep growing.
Yeah. Welcome it all. Thank you.
Thank you again.
That is a wrap on episode 55 of the GCSA podcast. I want to thank Kayla Kipp for taking the reins as the host of this episode, and Bree Kinney from Troon Golf for being our guest. You can find Kayla on Twitter, or X, or whatever we're calling it now, at Kipp, that's two P's, underscore Kayla, while Bree is at Biolo Bree, which is BioLoBrie. Got some big things in the works here in podcast land for the rest of this year and into next year as well. We'll be doing an in-person recording during an upcoming trip to Sanibel Island, Florida, that I'm very excited about. You won't want to miss that one when it drops, probably around the 1st of October. Plus, we're already working on plans for live recordings during the GCSAA conference and trade show in Phoenix next January, and a podcast stage there that will also feature a host of other well-regarded industry podcasts doing live recordings of their own. Lots of momentum, lots of excitement as we wrap up 2023 and roll on into 2024. For now, though, I will sign off by thanking our podcast editor, Evan Shapiro, the folks at InView for their ongoing sponsorship of the podcast, the GCSAA Board of Directors, and all my coworkers at Association Headquarters in Lawrence, Kansas. And most importantly, my thanks to each of you for subscribing, downloading, and listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll catch up again soon on the next episode of the GCSAA podcast.